Okay. Just one last ha'ara on Shuda D'Dayani that I didn't. I ran out of time yesterday, but I just wanted to speak it out. This is something that, again, I didn't stress it enough. It was very bad in terms of the presentation, and I thank Adam for bringing it up, which was a lot of the explanation of Shuda D'Dayani has to do with just, you know, translation of words. What does the word Shuda mean? So we were trying to figure it out. So that's why Rashi and Minatam had that machlokes when they said in the case where the shliach is allowed to do whatever he wants, that was called Shuda Adif. So then they used that as a raya. Oh, you see, that's what Shuda D'Dayani means, because it was a Shuda de Shlicha, right? As opposed to, you know, so there's no halachic concept of Shuda de Shlicha, right? So the Shuda D'Dayani, but nevertheless, once we know what the word Shuda means, we can have it. So I mentioned a few days ago, I think on Friday actually, at the very end of Shir, that the Ran also having trouble trying to figure out what Shuda D'Dayani means. So he says the Yesh Omrim, it's Shuchta D'Dayani. That it means that it's a melitza that you can bribe the judges, right? So that's a little disconcerting, right? You can bribe the judges. Isn't that a pasuk, right? And you knocked out half the perek of Shnei Dayanei Gzeiros if you say that Dayanim are allowed to take shochad. The whole Gemara in the end of Ksuvos goes back and forth saying about, like, if once you were walking down the street and somebody said Shalom Aleichem to you and the other one said Shalom Aleichem Rebbe Umori, so you can't be a dayan for him because he gave you more covet than the other guy, whatever. You know, little things that the Tanoim and Amoraim were so careful not to take any kind of favors from a litigant, because they held that was begeder shochad. So it's really hard to understand what the Ran is even talking about, that it's shuchta d'dayani. But Lamaisa Rabbeinu Tam raises this issue as well. It says, once you have this idea of shuda d'dayani, that the dayan is basically allowed to just proclaim a winner, you know, based on whatever he wants, so Tosos asks, why not actually just bribe the dayanim? In other words, you say, listen, it's a $1,000 case, so, you know, make me an offer. You know, obviously $1,000 is too much, because, you don't want to lose all the money of the case. Make me an offer, $100, $500, you know, who's going to make me a better offer? You're going to pay me $500, you're going to net $500, gewaldic, you know, and the other guy's not willing to go that high, so somebody make me an offer and we'll see who I'm going to choose is going to be the winner. So Tosfos quotes Rabbeinu Tam's answer to that problem. What was the answer? Oh, so it says a dayan who receives any sort of payment is not a dayan. So what does that mean? Right, so you could say, you know, two basic mahalchim, no? So one, you could say, just, Rabbeinu Tam is just saying, like, whoa, calm down there. You know, we're not talking about bribes here. Bribery is the ABCs of Beis Din. You cannot have a bribe. So you'll say, Shuda D'Dayani is this, you know, outside of the normal style of psak of Beis Din, but we cannot so you want to argue that, like, well, we're not following the rules of Beis Din anyway, so maybe you could take a bribe and say no, we're never ever going to allow bribery into a Jewish court, and that's the end of it. That's the, you know, simple, very balbat shabshat, which could definitely be what Tosfos is talking about. Or you could say it's a technical vart. Right, he's saying that no, in a chinami, you want to bribe somebody in this case, go ahead and bribe, because this is not a regular psak Beis Din anyway. But what we spent a lot of time discussing, the idea of anadayan va'at lav dayan, right, or mar lav dayan, right? So you say, I'm a dayan and you are not a dayan, meaning in order to do a shuda d'dayane, you have to be a dayan. And even though in a chinami, since it's a shuda d'dayani, maybe we would allow some kind of bribery, but that would be an inherent stira into what you're trying to do. So if you're going to say that, oh, it's a case of shuda d'dayani, rule number one, what do you need for a shuda d'dayani? A dayan. You can't do a shuda d'dayani without a dayan. So therefore, if I were to take a bribe from you, by definition, I would be forfeiting my status as a dayan, and mamela, my shuddah d'dayani wouldn't work anymore. You know, so that's just a little icing on the cake. I just thought it was important to keep in mind that even though the Ran has the melitza of shuddah d'dayani, I don't think the Ran ever had a havamina that people are taking bribes to do a shuddah d'dayani, either because just push it, it flies in the face of everything that, you know, the Beis Din is supposed to stand for, or just technical, that the guy would lose his status as a dayan, and mamela, his shuddah d'dayani would be invalidated, l'mafreya, or mikana lahaba, or either way. So therefore, it would destroy the whole concept of shuddah d'dayani. Okay. Now I want to move on to the machlokes between Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim over here. So we had on Daf Lamed Amid Aleph, and again on Daf Lamed Amid Beis, we had a discussion of Amdu Shnei HaAnashim, right? So we have, let's go to the Tana Rabbanan Lamed Amid Aleph, Tana Rabbanan, Amdu Shnei HaAnashim, Mitzvah LeBalidin and Sheyamdu. So the Tanakhama says, it's the mitzvah that the litigant should stand. Amar Rabbi Yehuda, Shamati Shemratzu LeHoshiv, Eshneyam Moshivin. I heard that you can actually allow them to sit. Ezehu aser shelo yehi echad omed vechad yoshev echad medaber kol tzarkel vechad omer lo tzor dvarecha. Right, you cannot show any kind of inequality when it comes to the procedures of the. You can't show any inequality when it comes to the procedures of the Beis Din. And then going over to Laman Amid Beis, so we go back to it and we said, Amar Ula Machlokes, when is there a Machlokes between Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim? Bibale Dinin. Right? That's when you're talking about a Baal Din. Avo Be'edim Divrei Akol Bamida. When it comes to the Edim, everyone agrees they have to stand. Dichsiv Amdu Shnei Anashim. And we said before that Shnei Anashim, even though Pashup Shat in the Pasuk is that the Anashim are talking about the Baal Din, but Lamaisa, we know that the Shnei Anashim is really talking about the Eidim. Amravuna Machlokes B'Shas Masel Matan Av B'Shas Gmar Din Divrei Hakol Dayanin B'Yeshiva U'Balidinin Ba'Amida D'Chsev Vayashav Moshe Lishbot Es Ha'am Vayamod Ha'am. Right, so that we see again that even the litigants B'Shas Gmar Din have a chiyuv to stand. Lish Achrina. So we know that the Edim are like Gmardin, and Mimela we learn from the Edim standing. So that means that the Edim have to stand. You know, b'shas something. We'll see. It's a little bit of a discussion what it means that you have to stand b'shas. You know, the Edom have to stand. When do they have to stand exactly? And we said that we're going to learn out everybody else from Edom. So Mela, so Edom is like Mardin, and therefore everyone has to stand b'shas Mardin. And this plays itself out also in the story of the Bisu de Rav Huna, right? The official strangest solution to any problem. You know, it's really one of the harder solutions to understand that we had the Bisu de Rav, the wife of Rav Huna, came to be judged in front of Rav Nachman, and he said, I don't want to stand up for her because it's going to intimidate the other Baal Din. So, what was the big solution? A brilliant plan? A goose, right? So, his Beis Din was obviously in the five towns, and there's just geese all over the place, and or wherever he was similar in that way. So, So he said, bring a goose in there and throw it at me, right? And then I'm going to jump up out of my seat, and then everybody will see that I'm showing lots of kavod to the wife of Rav Huna. All right, Tosfos raises the issue. We'll deal with that at length. Okay, yes? Right, so that's Tosfos's kasha, so we're going to work on that. Yeah, we're going to try to spend a good amount of time on that sugyim. This is actually the only place in Shas where they talk about the giving kavod to the wife of a Talmud Chacham. We have that other Gemara in Ksuvis about perhaps giving kavod to a relative of a Talmud Chacham, but this is the only place. And interestingly also, it's not in Shulchan Aruch. It's not mentioned in the Rambam, and it's not mentioned in Shulchan Aruch. It's one of those things, I forgot who made a list. And one of the... What? No, I just remember one of the big achronim. What? Not the Magen Avraham. Somebody made a list of all of the dinim, which are definitely dinim, that just never made it into the Shulchan Aruch at all. So I don't recall if this is on his list. First, I can't recall who made the list, and now I can't recall if it's on his list. So now it's mentioned in the Taz. It's mentioned in other places. The Sheila Siyavitz has a tshuva about it. Milchas Chinuch talks about it somewhat at length. So there are plenty of sources to say that it is absolutely Halacha L'maisa, but it's interesting that it's not in the Rambam and it's not in Shulchan Aruch. I don't really know why. It just isn't. So it's pretty black on white that it's a din. So okay, we'll have to, you know, but we'll try to be mevarah the din at length. But just for our purposes, the reason I'm bringing in the story now is that that was all b'shas maso matan. Meaning, we said the Gemara continues in the middle of the story. V'ha'amar mar machlov b'shas maso matan avu b'shas gemara din divriya kol dayan b'yishiva bali din ba'amida. So we said that even the Bissa de Rav Huna, that's great. When she walks into the Beis Din, he wants to stand up for her. So he pulled shtick and was able to stand up for her in an inconspicuous fashion or an overly conspicuous fashion. But Lemaisa, what was he going to do? Bishas Gemar Din, that she had to stand up again. And what's he supposed to do? He's supposed to sit and she's supposed to stand. So he answered the Yosef Kiman de Share Misane. He sat like someone who was tying their shoes. So he's saying that he basically crouched like it wasn't clear that he was not sitting, he was not standing. We'll have to see what problem did that actually solve. But Lemaisa, you see, they were taking this din very seriously, that even though we're going to let the wife of Rav Huna sit for the entire proceedings, but she has to stand up b'shas gemar din, and the dayanim kind of have to sit b'shas gemar din. So this is something the Gemara is taking very seriously, and that's why a lot of the Rishonim point out, you see that we paskin like Rabbi Yehuda against the Chacham, even though normally we'd say Yachid v'Rabim, but for whatever reason, in this case, it seems that the flow of the Gemara accepts the sheet of Rabbi Yehuda, that the litigants don't have to stand the whole time, they just have to stand b'shas gemar din. So that seems to be the psak of the Gemara. Okay, so what is this business of standing b'shas gemar din? And specifically, we said that the Edom stand, because the Edom are kigmar din dami, and we have the hekesh between the Bali Dinim and the Edom. So just to explain the idea of the Edom being kigmar din, so we also, just to explain it, I just want to add in that if you took a look, there's a tiny comment of the Rush in the sixth parak, in Parak Shavuos HaDayanim. So the Gemara in Shavuos HaDayanim has a quick description of when you're supposed to sit and when you're allowed to sit and when you're allowed to stand. Right? So they said, when you take a Shavua, you have to stand. And the Rush adds in just a couple of words, and the Rush says, "Yeah, when you take a shvua, you have to stand because a shvua say this is shvuas hadayanim is kigmar din." Meaning, let's say you have a fellow and he swears. What's an example of a shvuas hadayanim? Well, when the Gemara says shvuas hadayanim in that Mishnah, they're talking about shvuas modim emiktsas, right? Talking about shvuas modim emiktsas. Other examples, there's really three. Three examples of what we would call shvuos hadayanim. There's three shvuos daraisa that the Torah is mechayev a person under certain circumstances. Right? There's three kinds of shvuos daraisa. Number one is shvuos modim miktas. Number two is shvuos eid echad, and number three is shvuos hashomrim. Right? So those are really the three types of shvuos daraisa. Every other kind of shvua that you could have is a shvua midirabbanan. Now, in the earlier parak, especially the third parak here, talk about shvuas bitui, right? Which is what we think of when we think of a shvua. We say, oh, I swear I'm going to do this. I swear I did do this. I swear I'm not going to, whatever it is, right? Those we call in halacha shvuas bitui. Those are shvuas where you're basically saying, I swear about something informationally, in terms of just stam mundane types of shvuas, right? You have a shvuas shav, right? Which is what I'd say the average high school kid violates approximately 50 times a day. That's like they throw in the words "I swear to God" into every sentence. So the Gemara says, "What's an example of a shvua shav?" So if you swear, "I swear to God, this is made out of wood," like you're swearing about something that everybody understands is a davar pashut, right? Or the flip side of a shvua shav would be If you say it, I swear to God, this is made out of metal, which is really made out of wood. So that's also, it's not a shua sheker, because everyone knows you're lying, but it's a shua shav. Like, what's the point of that? You know, so it's, I try to explain to my guys often. I said, it's actually when you're saying, I swear to God, it was the best thing ever. Like, calm down. I know you don't mean to swear to God, but that's actually the definition of a shvuah shav. Like, I'll believe you if you just say it was the best thing ever or worst thing ever, which means like it was the best thing that happened in the last 10 minutes. But there's whenever something reasonably decent happens. I mean, it's a nice best day ever today. Today was the best day ever since yesterday and till tomorrow, which is Baruch Hashem, a very good outlook to have in life. But not actually something like our words should hopefully mean a little bit more than talk shouldn't be that cheap. So nice. And those are other types of shuas. But when we're talking in the sixth parak and the sixth parak of Masechta Shuas, we're talking shuas adayanim, modim miktsas, eid echad. Not really so much shuas hashomrim that comes in the fifth parak, but those are the shvuos that you have to take be'amida, and the Rosh says, because those shvuos are gemar din. That's like gemar din. So now we have gemar din's like gemar din, we have edus is like gemar din, and we have a shvuos like gemar din. And not only that, but there are different definitions of what edus even means. What could edus even mean? Shas edus, meaning when you're doing what? When you're being made, you're saying the actual testimony. So you're going to speak for however long. I don't know how long you're actually going to testify for, but it's not more than a minute. Right? You're going to speak some words. You're going to say, this is what I saw, this and this. You make a prepared statement. Right? And then you also have another possibility in Adis being like Gemar Din. Right? Even Bishas, Kabbalah say this. When they're giving you, when they're drilling you, the Drisha V'Chakira, etc. So it seems that that also could be considered Kigmar Din according to some Rishonim. So really, the whole, it's according to some, it could be the whole Eidus process is like, Gemar Din. And so we have a lot of things here. We have either just Mishas Agadas Eidus or even Mishas Kabbalas Eidus. We have Mishas Shvua. And we have Bishas Gemar Din, right? So you have an Eid Echad, he comes and testifies, you owe $1 million. You swear you don't owe $1 million. When you're taking that Shvua, it's Gemar Din. So the simple kasha on all of this is, no, it's not. Not everything is Gemar Din. Gemar Din is definitely Gemar Din. You know, when the Dayanim say, Ish Ploni Atachayev, Ish Ploni Atazakai, that's Gemar Din. You know, give him a gavel or something, they bang it on the table, and it's Gemar Din. I get it. That makes sense. But everything else is Gemar Din also? The guy takes a Shvua. That's Gemar Din. It's not the Gemar Din. The Gemar Din will come based on the fact that he took a Shvua. It's not like everybody goes home after he takes a Shvua. The guy says, you owe me $1 million. So I only owe you $500,000. I'm going to take a Shvua d'oraisa. Right? It's a whole procedure. And they learn the procedure of the Shvua d'oraisa. It's very scary stuff. Even a Shvua d'rabban is pretty scary. But the Shvua D'oraisa, the Gemara discusses all the halachas with them that will come the Kitas Chefetz. Right? You have to mamish hold a Sefer Torah and you sit on a deathbed and they scare you and they shut the lights and they make ghost noises in the background and they say how when Hashem said, Lo Sis Hashem, Hashem Elkech Lashav, the whole world shook and it's scary and they really, they do a number on the guy. And then he takes the Shvua, I really only owe $500,000, I don't owe $1 million. Okay, do we all then stop and go home? We don't go home. We finish up the case. There's a Gemar Din involved. It's not that the Shvua is Gemar Din. So how does this make any sense? So I think there's a very poshut svara working here. And I think this also helps us understand what is the machlokes between Rabbi Yehuda and the Chacham. Right? I think you could divide up the this lashon comes from a lot of the Rishonim when they speak in the sixth parak, they use these terms. You could divide up the acts that go on in a Beis Din between two distinct categories, right? You could say what's called tachsise Beis Din and what's called a maisa Beis Din. What's the difference between the two? what would be tachsisei beis din versus maisa beis din? So tachsisei beis din is procedural matters. Procedures, right? Everything is important in a beis din, but there are certain things that it's just you need to do them. You know, state your name. What's your name? My name is Ploni. My name is, you know, Ruvain. Whatever it is. Okay, is that like an official Maisa Beis Din? What'd you do today? I went to Beis Din and I said my name. Like, that's what we call a Hechitimtza, to get the case going. I have to tell my name, right? And there's a Masa Umatan, right? They say, here's my version of the story. I say my version of the story. He says his version of the story. That's also, those are Tachsisei Beis Din. It's necessary to be done. There's deliberations on behalf of the Dayanim, one with the other. They schmooze it out. They talk. They argue. They go back and forth. Right? These are not official Maisei Beis Din. These are Tachsisei Beis Din. However, when it comes to certain acts, they will generate and will count as official Maisei Beis Din. We have this idea that in Beis Din, if you do X, the halacha will be directly affected by it. Right? So I go to Beis Din, I am Modi B'miktas, I now know that I'm going to have to take a Shvua D'oraisa, and because of that Shvua D'oraisa, I'm going to be putter from the amount that I'm denying and chayiv in the amount that I'm admitting to. Right? So that is an official Maisa Beis Din. I do an act. Based on that act, there is a very direct result. You hear? I give edus. I know that if my edus passes drisha v'chakira, if I am like two edim, then I'm going to be mechayev this person. If I get up there and I give good testimony that this guy owes $1 million, he will absolutely have to pay $1 million. Those are the rules. Like, there's nothing anybody could do to say, oh, but if you get Dayan Ploni, then maybe when your testimony won't be effective and you won't have payment. No! Once I give my Haggadah's Eidus, there's nothing anybody can do. That's an official Maisa Beis Din. Right? There's nothing anybody can do about it. It's not procedural. It's official. There's nothing anybody can say or do to change that. When I give my Haggadah's Eidus, that is an official Maisa Beis Din, that my words are going to be effective. Now, you could argue, maybe, you know, they're going to find a hole in my testimony, whatever. Okay, but Lemaisa, at the end of the day, my edus is an official Maisa Beis Din. Right? So that's, you have the concept of a shvua, you have a concept of edus. These are official Maisa Beis Din, and therefore, when I give my testimony, that's kigmar din dummy. The gemar doesn't mean it's dafka gemar din. It can't mean that because it's not gemar din. The case will continue. However, what the gemara l'chora means to say is that these are official maisei beis din, right? They are parts of the Jewish court case that are outlined and described in the Torah, and their results are qualified and categorized by the Torah. And perhaps that's also the pshat when we talk about Kabbalas Eidus. Why would some Rishonim say Kabbalas Eidus also constitutes a part like the Gemar Din, and therefore they have to stand for that as well? Why would that be official? So maybe because Vidarashta V'Chakarta is in the Torah as well. You could argue that when the Torah talks about Drisha V'Chakira, so they're also describing a Maisa Beis Din. So when we're talking about Kabbalas Eidus, before we even let them stand up there and give their testimony, maybe that's also an official Maisa Beis Din. The Torah just lists off, this is part of the official procedure that we have to do, and it's effective, and therefore some Rishonim suggest that even Kabbalas Eidus and Bishas Drisha V'Chakira would also be Kigmar Din. Now, we all know it's not Gmar Din, but it could be considered an official Maisa Beis Din. And therefore, that's the machlokes between Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim. Rabbi Yehuda holds, or before we get to Rabbi Yehuda, the Chachamim hold, listen, everything that happens, when you get From you walk in the front door of that Beis Din, and once the case starts, everything is necessary. If the Dayanim are just up there telling jokes and they're schmoozing, oh, what's your name? My name is Reuven ben Yaakov. Oh, Reuven ben Yaakov, are you related to Shimon ben Yaakov? He's a close cousin of mine from my wife's side. And they're playing Jewish geography for 3 minutes at the beginning of the case. So kulei amar lo pligi that you don't have to stand for that. I don't think anybody holds that there's a chiyuv to stand if anybody's just schmoozing. What the chachamim mean is that there's a chiyuv to stand even b'shas tachsisei beis din. B'shas maso matan. Tell me your side of the story. Tell me your name. Why? Because we cannot have a psak din without this. It's all necessary. It's all part of the case. Everything that goes on from the moment the case opens up until the shas gemar din is part of the official case, and therefore, chacham hold, you have to stand for all of it. Mashenkin, Rabbi Yehuda, he says, yes, it's true that you have to have these things. They're not wastes of time. They're not superfluous. You must have actual maso matan. You must have actual discussions. But those are tachsise beis din. And therefore, the Torah wasn't prescribing those things. Those are not viewed as, quote-unquote, part of the case in the same light that the actual Maase Beis Din are viewed as part of the case. And therefore, the Torah was only mechayev you to stand for an actual Maase Beis Din, not for the Tachsise Beis Din, and therefore, you only have to stand specifically Bishas Ha'adah Sa'edim, Bishas Kabbalah Sa'edim, perhaps, Bishas Shavua, Bishas, Gemar Din Mamish, those are the official Maise Beis Din that a person has to stand for, not the Tachsise Beis Din. We view those as a means to an end, not as the Iker part of the case. So perhaps that's the machlokes between Rabbi Huda and the Chacham. So I think if we use this as a backdrop to understanding the continuation of the Sugya, I think it'll help us a lot. Okay, so what do we have here? So we have a machlokas Rishonim, although the Rishonim will hold the other way, remains somewhat nameless, but they are mentioned. A machlokas Rishonim, how seriously do we take this standing business? Right, so let's take a look in the Chidushei HaRamban. And we'll try to speak out the Chachmei Svarad, although, as we'll see, many hold this, perhaps everybody holds this way. But each of the Ramban, the Rashba, the Ritva, they all have their own little rayas. And it's nice to speak it out somewhat clearly. So we have the Ramban, Diramas Lavo Be'edim, Divra Koba Amida, Yesh Misha Omer Shemeidu B'Yeshiva, Ein Edusan Edus. There are those who say that if they are going to testify b'yeshiva, then even b'di'eved, their edus doesn't count. Right. Give an example. Let's say you daven Shmon Esrei. So I think everyone knows what's the name that we give to the Shmon Esrei. Right? We call it Shmon Esrei because Shmon Esrei equals 19. Right? So we call it because we like good shtick, so we want to call it by the name that's off by one. And, you know, it's okay in Gematria to be off by one, so we call it Shmona Esrei. And therefore, but what's the real name for it? Amida, right? Amida. So let's say you daven the Amida b'yeshiva. Are you Yotze? Sure. Again, we're not going to give you any awards, but you're Yotze. Sometimes you're stuck. You have to daven the Amida b'yeshiva. Okay, but Lamaisa, if you daven Amida b'yeshiva, it's good. What about, you know, what about other things? If you sit for Dvarim Shebekdusha and you're Ashkenazi, it's also your Yotze. Svardim sit for Dvarim Shebekdusha all the time. Svardim sit for Kaddish, you know, they sit through everything. They're very much more chilled out than we are. So they sit for Dvarim Shebekdusha. Ashkenazim stand for Dvarim Shebekdusha, but still, if you sat for it, so if you're the guy saying the Kaddish, you should really stand because it's Kavarat Tzibur. But if you're listening to the Kaddish, so you could sit because It's the only reason he'd be standing is for Davar Shebekdusha, but he couldn't say, your Armen Yeshmei Rab is not Armen Yeshmei Rab, it still is. So all these things, if you sat through them, b'di'evet, you're still Yotze. So here we have Yesh Omer who say that if the Edim sit, they're not Yotze. It doesn't count as Edus at all. Right? And it's amazing if you think about it. You have Edim. They say, Ploni killed Ploni at such and such a time, and they pass through Drisha v'Chakira, they do everything, and then they give their Edus be Yeshiva, and then they disappear. What do we do? So Ploni, according to this Deya, Ploni's putter. Let him go home. If they would have been standing, he would have been Chayav Misa, and now he did it. It's putter. Unbelievable. So as we'll see, that wasn't necessarily a great example. According to at least Tosfos and Sanhedrin, maybe Yeshiva Hetter is different, but Lamaisa, maybe not. So according to this Deya, it's Ma'akev even B'di'evid. And they have a great Raya. A really great Raya that I don't think there's ever going to be a good answer for. And their Raya is the Gemara in Meseches Zvachim. So I think this is a good Gemara to see inside. It's not a super exciting Gemara in that vein, but it's a good Gemara to see inside. Here it is. At least part of it. So the Gemara in Zvachim on Daf Tes Zayin. So what are we trying to figure out? So first of all, there's a Mishnah Tes Vav Amid Beis. Mishnah Tes Vav Amid Beis starts off, what is a way to ruin your avoda? So it says, Kol Zvachim Shekiblu Daman. So we're starting from what we call Kabbalah. What's Kabbalah? What? Good. As long as no one says Jewish mysticism, I'm fine. We're not talking about Kabbalah here. We're talking about Kabbalah, right? Kabbalah, where there's four avodas that you do with the blood, right? It's four avodas that you do with the blood of a korban. What are the four avodas? So the first one is? Well, four. So of the four, it's Shechita, Kabbalah. Oh, no, that's not official avoda. That's just... the third one is Holacha. That's Machlokes, whether Holacha is an avoda, but we paskin it is. And Zrika. Zrika is when you... Don't say sprinkle! It's one of my 10,000 pet peeves. Zrika, right? I don't understand. What's the word in Hebrew for a basketball shot? I'll give you a hint. It's the same word. Zrika, right? A shot is a Zrika. Also, by the way, a shot in the arm is a Zrika, right? So he says, nobody's like going up to the basket. No guy, now Steph Curry doesn't go to the three-point line and go, peace, sprinkle. It means to throw. It means to throw, right? They didn't sprinkle the blood on the Mizbech. They threw it.
How much blood did they throw?
A cupful. They caught the blood in a Mizrak. They caught the blood in a Mizrak. Again, just let me finish the procedure, and I think you'll understand what I'm saying. They caught the dam in a Mizrak, right? It was not like one of those things they use to put flour on a pizza thingy, you know? Like it doesn't sprinkle out the blood. It's an open-topped cup with a cone shape on the bottom. Why did it have a cone shape? So people wouldn't put it down, right? And put it down, you're asking for trouble in life. But specifically in the Beis HaMikdash, they didn't want anybody to put it down because then it would become nikrash, it would congeal, right? So therefore they always had the cone-shaped mizrak on the bottom so nobody would be tempted. They would then walk over to the mizbeach, sometimes only a couple of steps, and then they would throw the blood in the mizrak onto the corner of the mizbeach, and they would try to hit the corner in a way that the blood went onto both walls that the corner was representing. That was what they called it. It's matan shtayim shehin arba, right? Matan achas shehin matan echad achas matan. I don't remember the grammar. One that's really two that's really four. Meaning, when you had to get it on all four sides of the mizbeach, you really threw it onto the corner in a way that it would spread from one wall to the other around the corner. So that's how they would do it. Now, why does everyone think Zrika means sprinkling? I think, I could be wrong, but I think it's because most people's association with the Avoda is Yom Kippur. And on Yom Kippur, in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, the Kohen Gadol really did sprinkle he did Zrika with his finger, Achas Lamala, Sheva Lamata, right? So, and then he would count. And everybody has pictures or visions of the Kohen Gadol doing like this, which you would categorize probably as sprinkling. So I think, but that was once a year in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Now also, it happens to be, there was another time that the Kohen would use his finger, not the Mizrach. That, when was that? That would be by a Korban Chatas. But that wasn't sprinkling, that was placing. He would take the dam of the Chatas went on the upper corners of the Mizbeach. They had a, there was a line going around the halfway point of the height of the Mizbeach. And most Korbanos that they would throw the blood would be on the bottom half of the corners of the Mizbeach, on ground level. And then for the Chatas, the Kohen Gadol would walk up the ramp halfway. There was a little exit. You know what I'm talking about? There was an exit ramp on the ramp where you'd like get off before you got to the top. Kohen Gadol would get off on the exit ramp and walk around the halfway point of the Mizbeach, and he would take the dam and he would touch it to the upper corners of the Mizbeach. And that's, but that's again not sprinkling, okay? Just the fact of the day. Zrika means throwing. Okay. So it's important. I don't know. I think, you know, I think it's good to know these things. Okay, so here we're talking about the second avoda, the avoda of Kabbalah. Now, who cares if these things are avodas or not? Meaning, halacha is the one that's debated. Is halacha officially an avoda? So the taina to say it's not an avoda is to say, you know, what? No, it can't be kosher bizar. But the taina to say it's not an avoda is sometimes they didn't need to go anywhere. So the Mishnah answers that. Okay, so if you didn't need to go anywhere, you didn't need to go anywhere. But if you did, it's an avoda. It's not a mandatory avoda that you must do. It's just that if you need to do it, it's an avoda. So like you said, the reason we start over here with kol hazvachim shekiblu daman is that Kabbalah is mikabbalah ve'elach. From that avoda, that's when you can't be a zar anymore. That's when you have to be a kohen. The zar is allowed to shecht his own korban or her own korban, as the case may be. Shechita is kshera b'isha, is kshera b'zar, right? It doesn't matter in that case. But once the blood is, once the animal is shechted, then everything has to be done by a kohen going forward. And not only that, but if it's an avoda, then if you don't have the right thoughts while you're doing that avoda, it could passel the carbon. So you have to have the correct kavanos as well. So even if a person does holacha while walking to the, while taking the mizrak in his hand and walking toward the mizbeach, so if he has in mind, oh yeah, yeah, we're going to eat this korban chutz lizmano, or we're going to eat it chutz lemkomo, so he just passeled the whole thing. And then depending on whether he said chutz lizmano or chutz lemkomo, it could be pigul and the person who eats it is chayav karis. So that's what we're talking about over here. This is not as serious. This is just stuff that will ruin the korban's effectiveness, right? So it says kol hazvachim shekiblu daman zar, can't be a zar. Onain, what's an onain? Right. So now, what? Onain is between. It's the day the person died until the person is buried. Right now, here's the annoying trick question, second of the day after Zrika, right? What is the number one din of an onin, the most important din of an onin? Aha, he fell for it, right? That is true colloquially, but not biblically. What do I mean by that? Correct. An onin is puzzle for the avodah. That's really the only din in the Torah about an onin. What we call an onin, and it's not our fault, the Rishonim call it, I think the Gemara even calls it from time to time. What we call an onin is really referred to by the Mishnah as Mishameso Mutalafanov. It's really a different din, not based on the Torah view of aninus. Now what are we talking about over here? When a person suffers the loss of a close relative, so that person is pater from all mitzvos aseh, right? Now that is mostly or completely based on the concept of osik v'mitzvah potum min ha-mitzvah, and or based on the concept of kavod hames, but that's not what the Torah means when the Torah calls somebody an onin. An onin really means that it can't eat kachim, it can't do avoda, and it can't even eat maser, I think. Right? That's because we say by vidui meiser, lo achalti be'oni mimen. Right? I didn't eat it when I was an onin. Right? So that's so these are some of the dinim of an onin as described by the Torah, even though the colloquial term onin is generally nothing to do with that. It's generally a person who's not chayiv and mitzvos because they're dealing with the funeral arrangements, etc., of the person that they just lost. So that's the difference. But that when this Mishnah says onein, it means an onein who can't do the avoda, right? Tevul yom. You guys know what a tevul yom is? Tevul yom means, right? You guys ever learn brachos? Meim asai, kornish mar ba'arvis, mishasha kohanim lechnasim lechol betrumasim. Right? So what does that mean? Not usually tesa kochavim. Usually it's understood to be. So if tesa kochavim, but it means, why do they use such a weird term? So they use the term because we want to know that a tesa kochavim, once you went to the mikvah during the day, let's say a kohen became tummy. So you can't eat truma. You can't eat truma when you're tummy. So he has to go to the mikvah, but then he can't eat truma again. He has to wait for Harev Shemesh. He has to wait for the sun to go down, a tesa kochavim, and then he's mutter to eat the truma. Kol zman that he's tahor, but still can't eat truma, he's called a tevul yom. Okay? Next, mechusar kippurim. Similar idea. Right, mechusar kippurim means he went to the mikvah, he was a zav, let's say. He was a zav. So a zav, if he becomes a full-fledged zav, so he sees a number of times in a row, he has to then count shiva nikiyim, and he then has to go to the mikvah, wait for sunset, and the next day he's got to bring some karbanos. And then he can eat kachim. So until those karbanos are brought, he can't eat kachim. Even though he's definitely tahor, he just called by halacha mechusar kippurim. And obviously also he can't do the avoda until he brings those specific karbanos. Mechusar begadim means he's not wearing all the big day kahuna. Shelo rachatz yadayim v'raglayim, meaning even though he just came out of the mikvah, he has to then wash his hands and feet by the kior. Arel doesn't have brismila, tamei, he's tamei. Yoshev, he's sitting. Okay, that's the one that's gonna that's the one that's gonna be important for us, right? Yoshev, he's sitting. You can't do the avoda while you're sitting. Let's say you're tired, right? You're tired. You don't want to stand. So you bring a nice chair. So you're the kohen. You do the shechita sitting, kabbalah, halacha, zrika. You're sitting. It's a shlamim. You just have to use the bottom part of the carbon anyway. You have a little wheelchair to wheel you around to the other side of the Mizbeach. You do the Zrika there. No good. Cannot do the Avodah while sitting. Similarly, you have to be standing, but your feet have to be touching the floor of the Beis HaMikdash. Omer al Gabe Ragle Chavero. Let's say he was standing on his friend's feet. So Pasal. All of these Pasal the Avodah. What about Kibel B'Smol? If he did the Kabbalah or he did the Avoda with his left hand, also Pasal, Reb Shimon Machshir, that also Pasals in, and Reb Shimon says it's good. Okay, this is a big machlokes. Is being a lefty a mum? Is being a lefty a mum? Or is it just that, right, I'm a lefty, but I'm not a Kohen, so it doesn't really matter. Let's say you're a lefty, but you could train yourself to be a righty. Or you're a lefty, but you could train yourself to do the Avoda with your right hand. So this is a big machlokes tanoim. Because if you say that being a lefty is a mum, it doesn't really matter that you could also do the avoda with your right hand. But if you say that there's nothing wrong with being a lefty, and if you're a kohen, it's just that the avoda is supposed to be done with the right hand, so then if you can do the avoda with your right hand, you're good to go. So this is part of that machlokas. Okay. Now, the Gemara says, Zor Minolan, and then we go on to try to prove different parts. What do we want to know? Where do we get this idea that if you do the avoda, it's going to pasul? So we're trying to figure out where we learn the isser of a zor doing the avoda, and we're trying to figure out. We quote the pasuk, and then after that, we try to figure out maybe we could have known it on our own, right? So we say, why don't you bring it out from a Kal V'Chomer? We started the Beir Rabbi Shmuel. We started a Kal V'Chomer from a Bal Mum. A Bal Mum If he eats kachim or he does the avodah, it doesn't count. It's no good. A zor, that's not a kohen with a mum. He can't eat kachim bechlal. So of course, kal v'chomer, if he does the avodah, it's no good. So then we tried to be mafrich all the kal v'chomers back and forth. So eventually we get to Yoshev. Eventually we get to Yoshev. Where does that come up over here? So we have Rav Misharshi Omer Asi kal v'chomer mi Yoshev. Rav Misharshi says, you want to know how you know that a zar can't do the avodah? You can bring a kal v'chomer from someone who does the avodah while he is seated. Uma Yoshev she'ochel im avar chilel. A Yoshev, let me ask you something. When a Kohen, let's say they bring a Korban Chatas. Korban Chatas is big stuff. It's called Kadshe Kadshim. Right? Korban Chatas is brought. Only Kohanim can eat it, not even their wives. Right? Wives of Kohanim are allowed to eat a lot of things that regular people are not allowed to eat. They're allowed to eat Truma. They're allowed to eat Matnas Kahuna from Chulin, right? The Zroa, the Kevan Lachyayim, which are the parts of the animal. Whenever you shecht any animal, you give Matnos Kahuna from that animal. The Zroa, the foreleg, the Keva, one of the stomachs, yummy. And the Lachyayim, part of the jawbone. So you're supposed to give that to the Kohen. The wife of a Kohen can eat that. Anybody could really eat that. But you're supposed to give it to the Kohen, nevertheless. And the chazev shok from a korban shlamim, right, from any kachim kalim, the wife of a kohen can eat. However, kachim kachim, only the kohen, only male kohanim can eat it, and they have to be inside the azara of the Beis HaMikdash. So, do they have to be standing when they eat it? No, of course they don't have to be standing when they eat it. They eat it like they eat a meal. So they sit down nicely and they eat the kachim. So he says, I don't understand. Ma Yoshev she'ochel im avad chilel. A person who's sitting is obviously allowed to eat kachim, but still, if he would do the avodah while sitting, that would disgrace the avodah, that would ruin it. So zor she'eino ochel. A zor, can he eat these parts of the kachim that only the kohen can eat? Of course not. It says so in the Torah. So a zor is not allowed to eat these things. Ain't odin shim avad chilel. Obviously, kal v'chomer, if he would do the avodah while seated, or I'm sorry, if you would do the avodah while being a zor, it would ruin the avodah. So that's the big kal v'chomer. It's pretty solid. Again, we know that Yoshev passes the avodah. We didn't say from where yet, but we know that it does. It was in the Mishnah, right? So we know that Yoshev passes avodah. And we know that a person could eat kachim, a kohen could eat kachim while seated. We know that a zar can't eat kachim no matter what, seated or standing. And we know that if a kohen sits while doing the avodah, he ruins it. So kal v'chomer, if a zar does avodah, he ruins it. I think I said it right. I think that's pretty obvious. So the Gemara answers, this is where we were trying to get. Mali Yoshev Shekain Pasul Edus. No. Whenever you have these types of kal v'chomers, what's the Gemara's goal? Gemara's goal is to find what we call a pircha. What's a pircha? Well, not just the opposite, but something that shows you were trying to make Yoshev as a kal. Right? But it's also really a chumrah. Meaning maybe the whole reason why Yoshev ruins the avodah is because Yoshev is a big deal. What's the big deal? If an aide gives testimony, Yoshev is pasul eidus. So you see, standing is like a big deal and sitting is really bad. Maybe being a czar is not so bad. You're going to try to show me that, if Yoshev, which is not so serious, that ruins the avodah. Right? And how do I know Yoshev is not so serious? Because if a person eats kachim while he's seated, good to go. So Yoshev is no big deal. A czar who eats kachim, no good. Right? So we see that Yoshev is more kal than a czar. So therefore, obviously, if Yoshev can't do the Avoda, Azar can't do the Avoda. But we said, no, maybe Yoshev is more serious. I'll give you a case where it's more serious. It's Pasul Eidus. So you see, Yoshev is a really big deal. So then the Gemara gives an interesting teretz. The Gemara says, no. What about, you know, so it's not so clear. Yoshev Talmud Chacham. Yoshev Talmud Chacham, as we saw in our Gemara, is allowed to give Eidus while seated. No, right? So he says, L'shem Yoshev, the cons. I don't even know exactly what this machlokus is over here. Shem Yoshev versus, one guy is darshan the Shem Yoshev, one guy is not darshan the Shem Yoshev. I'm not 100% sure what that means even. But basically saying, no, but the concept of Yoshev equals Pasul Eidus. Meaning, we know Yoshev is one of the things he can't do with Eidus. Okay, so he says, it's machlokus whether we do it. Bottom line is, the Lashon of the Gemara very, very strongly suggests, that if you gave Eidus while seated, you are Pasul LeEidus. So that is a great raya for those who say that standing is Ma'akev even B'dieved. Okay, and that was a very long-winded presentation of that Gemara. Running a little short on time. I just want to bring in one side point in terms of a very halacha l'maisa thing when it comes to Yoshev when you do the avoda, right? There is a very important issue that comes up from time to time with someone who's Yoshev when he does the avoda. How many people do the avoda nowadays? Virtually none, right? But it's still relevant for what halacha? Tefila, kind of. What? Yes, Birkas Kohanim, right? Birkas Kohanim, we learn many of the halachos of Birkas Kohanim from the Avoda, because Birkas Kohanim is part of the Avoda, right? And that's why, because it's part of the Avoda, that's why they have to come up by Ritzeh. Otherwise, you don't say Birkas Kohanim at any other point in the Shmona Esrei. So one of the Tanaim that the Shulchan Aruch and the Mishnah Berurah Paskin is Ma'akev B'dieved is Amida. Amida is ma'akev. You must be standing when you do Birkas Kohanim. And if a person is too weak to stand, he's not allowed to do Birkas Kohanim. Rabbi Leibowitz told me that he, in the hotel he was in for Pesach, there was a very old Jew who, I think he was like 95 or more, and he got up, to do Birkas Kohanim, and he was came up in a wheelchair. He tried to stand, and he couldn't stand. So he ended up just doing it sitting. So after davening, you know, people came over to him, not the old man. People came over to to Rabbi Leibowitz, and then they said, you know, what's going on here? How could he do that? So the real answer is, I just work here, you know. You know, it's not. He wasn't. I don't think he was officially the rabbi of the minyan. I think he was just giving shiur. So he's for sure not going to say anything. But even so, you know, when you have a group of people who showed up from anywhere and everywhere, you're not all of a sudden going to start imposing your will upon them. It's just not good policy. There's like one day that says that you could be mekel b'dieved. Maybe that's ruined to be salmachan. But definitely, according to the standard psak of all the normal poskim who we accept, including the Shulchan Aruch, including the Magen Avraham and the Taz, the Mishnah Berurah, etc. It's all. There's no heter whatsoever to sit during Birkas Kohanim. It's the same thing that the Gemara was saying with Bishas Avoda. So that's an important thing to keep in mind. So I think the Shulchan Aruch, I don't remember if it's the Shulchan Aruch or the Mishnah Berurah, has the Eitz. It says, if you need to sit down in between parts, let's say the Chazan is saying a long Niggin, in between every word, he says, Yivarechecha, and they say Yivarechecha, and then he goes, like he has all Niggin, and then it says, Hashem. So the guy, if it'll help him, he could sit during that. Now, probably what's better to do than sitting is he could lean on the person next to him. During those times, he could lean, you know, take the weight off his feet, he could lean on the other guy's shoulder or something. Like usually people that old have hopefully children or grandchildren who can help them. So the guy's grandson could stand next to him and hold him up. And then when he's gets up to the words, so then he could let go. And, you know, the grandfather could say Hashem and then hold him again. And v'yishmerecha. So that you could actually do. But to just stam sit is not allowed. But that's all learned out from this Mishnah and the Gemara over there. That yeshiva b'shas avoda completely postles the avoda. Okay, so just b'kitzer to finish off, the Ramban disagrees, and as we'll see, virtually all the Rishonim, it's two deists and Tosfos, but the Ramban, the Rashba, the Ritva, the Rambam, they all disagree with this yesh misha omer, right? And he says v'lo nira kein. How could it be that we're going to say that b'di'evet, if you give your edus b'yeshiva, it's no good, and then we're going to let a Talmud Chacham sit l'charchila? It's impossible. How can you say such a thing? So he says that doesn't make any sense. And then he says, "V'imishum kavod haTorah adiv." I say the kavod haTorah, lo yaid klal. You know what? If you say no, kavod haTorah is so important that we're going to violate the din of edus, don't let him testify. There is another choice. Don't let him come to Beis Din at all. If it's such a disgrace to make him stand in front of the dayanim, then you can give him a tour altogether. That's not so gishmak. It says it must be the Gemara in Zvachim when it said, must be when the Gemara in Zvachim said that it's, pasul edus, that means pasul lechadchila. Yeah, we find that such a lashon in the Gemara. Pasul lechadchila. Kosher b'di'evid. Right? It's Gemara in Shabbos. Talks about when you see the word putter, what does it mean? Putter lavalasser, except for three cases. The Gemara in Shabbos says there's three times where it says putter and it means putter or mutter. When you find, it says when all the Mishnahs and the Brises in Shabbos, there are three times in all of Masech Shabbos where it says putter and it means putter or mutter. Every other time it means putter avalasser. These are code words. Puzzle usually means puzzle. Doesn't mean, better not to do it. It means puzzle. Right? It would have been just as good for the Gemara's purposes in Zvachim to say, you can't bring me a raya from standing, from yeshiva. Why? Because mitzvah sa'edim ba'amida. Because there's a mitzvah for edim to do amida. You can't bring me a raya from yeshiva. It could have worked. But they didn't do it that way. It says, you came, pasul edus. If you sit, you're pasul edus. It's pretty bad. Okay, so Lamaisa, the Ramban, says, I'm not afraid of that Gemara. It's just l'chadchila. So, yeah, I really didn't, really, in my searches, I didn't really find anything super satisfying in terms of answering for the Gemara in Zvachim. The Gemara in Zvachim is basically a tzarech iyun on everybody. But they know about it, they're not scared of it, but for whatever reason, that Gemara in Zvachim sounds like your puzzle even b'di'evit. The best answer I saw, I think it's in our Gemara, the Meiri in our Gemara, basically says that Gemara is not aliba de maskana of that sugya. In other words, we were going back and forth, and we're saying, I could have learned out that a zor is possible from this, a kavachoma with that, a kavachoma. No, I'll be mafrit the kavachoma like that. Even that's not super satisfying because, yeah, fine, it's not aliba de maskana. Remember, we had that in the Ramban here. The Ramban said, the whole case of kol kvud debas melachpanim is not aliba de maskana. Yeah, but that's not the part of the Gemara that we rejected. We just said, in general, we're not going to go with that limud at the end of the day. But to say that statement, we rejected the outright statement that a person who does Eidus be yeshiva is possible. We don't find that. The best case scenario, and although the Ramban doesn't say it, is to say it's some kind of machlokes asugyas. There's a machlokas between this Gemara and that Gemara, and then leave it at that. We paskin like this Gemara, that if you do it b'di'eved, it's okay. That's why we allow Talmud Chacham to yeshiva. The problem with that is, that Gemara acknowledges this Gemara, so you can't say it's a machlokas asugis. You understand what I mean? The Gemara in Zvachim says, Talmud Chacham could do it b'yeshiva. So really stuck. Really, it's a big tzarachian on all of these Rishonim. Okay, Lamaisa, we'll try to be mavara this a little bit better tomorrow. I don't think I'll have a good answer, but at least just to be mavara the different shitas as best as we possibly can.